From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. As you've no doubt noticed, the United States' ongoing war with Iran has caused significant price increases at the gas pump, as attacks on shipping have sent oil prices surging. But there are other economic consequences of this conflict. One of them will start with farmers and eventually hit everyone who, well, everyone who eats food.
Fertilizer.
A fourth-generation farmer in Virginia says he called his fertilizer supplier the moment he heard about the attacks in Iran.
Kansas farmers are making less for their crops, but huge fertilizer companies are lining their pockets.
The focus of all of this concern, the Straits of Hormuz, the area. It's a critical transportation choke point for moving both oil and a significant amount of the world's fertilizer.
Of course, fertilizer is an essential tool for ensuring crops grow at a healthy pace and quantity. And much like during the pandemic, any disruptions will have a chain reaction that affects several industries downstream. So with that, we'll start the hour today by talking about how the conflict is affecting the fertilizer in particular and farming more broadly. Joining us now to talk more about this is Josh Linville, Vice President of Fertilizer for Stone X, a market analysis firm. Josh, welcome to the show. Thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Who would have thought that fertilizer was going to have its 15 minutes of fame, but here we are.
Here we are. There are many things I did not think I would have to be thinking about in 2026, but here we are. Listeners, we'd love to hear from you, especially if you're on a farm. Are you thinking about, the cost of fertilizer? 800-222-9455 is the number. Let us know about it. 800-222-9455. All right, Josh. So it's been about 3 weeks since the conflict, the war began. It seems there was some hope initially from the administration that this wouldn't last too long. But, here we are. So what is the big picture situation with fertilizer right now?
Basically, this couldn't happen at a worse time in the calendar. If we go back 3 or 4 weeks and you were to have me on and say, Josh, I need you to build the nightmare scenario for the fertilizer industry, what would that look like? The event that's going on today is exactly what I would have talked about. The time of year is exactly what I would have talked about. This is the time of year when the biggest amounts of exports, the shipments from that body of water, happen to meet that just-in-time spring demand that farmers need, to your point, to raise that crop. And now all of a sudden, one of the most important bodies of water in the entire world, the Strait of Hormuz, has been shut down for 2.5-3 weeks. And during the first several days of this, woke up Saturday morning to the news and thought, okay, here we go. Fortunately, I thought, like a lot of other people thought, this would be a very short-term conflict and we'll be back to sailing stuff in a few days. All we need to worry about is the loss of shipment days. Well, then it didn't get done. And all of a sudden, we moved into the second half of the first week and into the second week, and we started to see production in the Persian Gulf starting to shut down, because without that vessel traffic going back and forth, you've got a finite amount of storage assets, and that gets filled very, very quickly. So without the vessels moving, they had to start slowing and stopping their production. Now it was a real fundamental problem. But now as we're in the third week, we are moving into the third and fourth wave. And the third wave being, this is now moving beyond it. Now it's no longer just about fertilizer production in the Persian Gulf. Now it's about the other products that move out of the Gulf. Things like copper, which phosphate production is highly reliant upon, is no longer sailing. Anhydrous shipments, which phosphates relying on. Natural gas, which other nations like India, the second largest urea producer in the world, a lot of their gas comes from the Persian Gulf, and that's no longer flowing, and their production levels are going down. So now it's becoming a global production supply problem. And then last night, attacks on Iran's South Pars gas fields, those are directly linked to their nitrogen production capabilities. Same thing happened in Qatar. They struck their gas fields, the same ones that feed their nitrogen production capacity. So this is no longer about once the strait reopens, it's a matter of restarting all this stuff. Now we have to start talking about repairs, because frankly speaking, who wants to be in a gas field looking over their shoulder wondering, am I in the spot where the next missile or drone is going to come and strike? It's going to take even longer now. This is long-term ramification type situations.
Let's get real basic here. I've never grown anything other than a tomato plant in my backyard, at least not successfully. What is fertilizer in the modern industrial agricultural context?
It's what feeds the crop to maximize the yield. It's a thing that we need to have in order to make as much as we possibly can, because without it, Where does it come from?
We're like, you know, I think a lot of people say fertilizer and they picture scooping up cow dung and spreading that on the field. It's a little different than that, obviously.
Right. That's the place part in some parts if you're close to like a dairy farm or something like that. But for the most part, it's a manufactured product. If you're looking at nitrogen, for example, a lot of the production is based on natural gas. Natural gas is your input. And through the process, it's a very high temperature, high pressure process that creates anhydrous, which is then used to upgrade into other nitrogen products like UAN and into urea. And so it's very, very reliant on natural gas inputs. Things like phosphate, that is dug out of the ground. You have to have phosphate rock reserves. It's a base product that is then finished with some inputs like sulfur, like anhydrous, and a manufacturing process that turns out a finished good like a DAP and MAP. And then potash, again, it's mined out of the ground, deep underground in some cases. It's manufactured into a finished product that the farmer can use to put on the field to grow a much better crop, a much more successful crop.
Why is the Middle East so important to this industry?
On the surface of it, and this is what we focused on for the first couple weeks, three of your world's top 10 largest urea exporters in the world sit in the Persian Gulf. It's Qatar, it's Saudi Arabia, and it is Iran. Three of the 10 largest anhydrous exporters, same nations, sit behind the Persian Gulf. One of the world's largest five phosphate exporters, Saudi Arabia, is sitting behind the Gulf. So right now, we are talking about losing major, major suppliers. Urea, for example, that's the one that kind of leads all the nitrogen products out there. Those three nations alone, on an annualized basis, account for 13.5 million tons of the urea global export marketplace.
So what are these specifically the products that farmers in Illinois are using? I mean, are they putting, you know, Saudi Arabian urea on the fields, you know, outside Champaign, for example?
Well, Illinois is a state that uses a lot more UAN and anhydrous. And the problem with it is, and people might sit there and say, well, I'm fine. UAN is actually in a better spot supply-wise than, say, what urea is today. And it's an absolute true statement. But the problem that we are leading into is that as the price of urea goes higher, that starts to push a lot of that demand to other alternatives. And also that demand starts looking at things that like anhydrous. It starts looking at UAN and saying, ah, this is a cheaper path than nitrogen. It's still, at the end of the day, it's a nitrogen nutrient in the soil to raise my crop. So if I have that capability of switching over, I'm going to do that. I'm going to save some money. Well, all of a sudden, that newfound wave of demand starts to pressure that price up. And so it's one of those situations where high tide raises all boats. So as urea moves up, it brings UAN with it, and it brings anhydrous with it.
You know, I think a lot of people might think, well, okay, if there's disruption for a few weeks or a month, maybe things can recover pretty quickly. Although I would say, I think back to what happened with toilet paper in 2020 and how hard to come by it was for months at a time. What are the downstream consequences potentially here if, you know, these ships with these products cannot get out of the Gulf for significantly longer periods of time?
I do think that if the strait were to reopen, let's just say somebody snaps their fingers and tomorrow morning the strait is reopened, it's safe. I think it's a multi-layered situation that gets back to normal. The first is obviously you got to get the vessels moving. You got to convince them it is safe. Nobody's going to hurt you. You're fine to sail. That might take a bit of time. Number two, now this new layer that happened last night, we have to repair these gas fields. You can't produce anything until you get those repairs done, and that could take a while. Once those repairs are done, now you have to start resuming production of gas and oil and things like that. That's not the flip of the light switch. It takes a minute. Once those flows start happening, now you have to restart your nitrogen production facilities. And any nitrogen producer will tell you that takes a while. That is not an easy process. But even past that, then we're to our longest situation. This could be weeks. This could be easily months before we catch up back to normal. The Persian Gulf was designed with a loading capacity for a constant flow of vessels, a constant daily, weekly, monthly flow of vessels coming in on a regular schedule. Well, now all of a sudden you've got all these vessels sitting there waiting, and they're all going to have a ticket and say, when's my time? When do I get to load? You can't do them all in one day. It takes between parking the vessel at the dockside, opening it, loading it, shutting it, pushing it off to sea. That can be anywhere from a 24 to 48 hour period. And you think about the hundreds, if not thousands of vessels that need to get loaded and get rolling again, it's going to take a long time. It's going to be a big backlog of shipments. So unfortunately, to your point, we solve this thing tomorrow. We've solved nothing short term. This is going to be a multi-week, a multi-month problem.
And fertilizer for a farm field is not a product that you can just spray on at any time, right? There are very specific times in the planting cycle. Talk about that.
There is, and time is not on our side. We're sitting here, we're entering into the second half of March, and we're going to be planting here in a few weeks. And once that plant starts to get high enough, it's too late. You can't get that in the soil. You can't get it to the crop in a method in which it's going to help it grow. So different parts of the U.S., different parts of North America are going to have different dates on the calendar where it's too late to put it on, but those dates are coming much, much sooner than later.
I guess this gets back to the idea, and I heard some other podcast making this point that, the Romans knew, right? You go back in ancient history, mm-hmm. people knew you don't launch wars during the planting season or the harvest season.
Yes.
And that's where you talked about the timing, I guess, not being great. You go ahead. Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say, a lot of people will sit there and say, well, we already have the product. I've heard this a lot, and I understand where they're coming from, and there is already a lot of product in place.
I want to hear, because I think it was a Farm Doc Daily at U of I said, I'm looking for the quote here, something like some percentage, and I don't have it in front of me, unfortunately, but like a lot of people had stocked up already on, 75%, there it is, had, 75% of fertilizer has already been purchased. So is this really a problem, or is this a media creation? Here we are perpetuating it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing. A lot of farmers will sit there and view it exactly as that. That's an industry that has been cried wolf to so many times. They see the story and they're like, oh, it's just another situation. They're just trying to sell me something at a higher price. I understand where they're coming from. I get it. I come from a farming family south of St. Joseph, Missouri. I've heard the story, so I get where they're coming from. But unfortunately, the reality paints a much darker picture. Again, let's focus on urea. Just because it's the trendsetter for nitrogen, yes, a lot of tons have already come here. The problem that we have, though, is that when you look at the calendar, March and April are the two biggest months for our import flow for the entirety of the year. And that doesn't even touch on the fact that May is also another big month. So the March, April, May timeframe is a very major period for an entire year. We need a lot of tons during this time. That's where it starts to get us in trouble. And unfortunately speaking, I think a lot of farmers did step up early. I think there are some supplies in place. But there's never been a point in time in this fertilizer year, our year being July 1 through June 30, where it's made sense for a farmer to buy, where the price was good versus the grain value and they could secure a profit. And that has people dragging their feet. And because the farmer had drugged their feet, the retailer drugged their feet. And that creates an entire situation where now all of a sudden, I don't know that we're quite as well bought as some people are thinking that we are. We are still in danger of losing some of those vessels that are supposed to come here for March and April if we don't get our price right with the rest of the world. And then we have to worry about getting the product in place. River systems, we need to work optimally. Rail systems, trucks have a lot of work to do. There is a lot more hurdles in front of us than what some people are making it out to be.
Is this a product that can be stored, sort of to take advantage of pricing fluctuations, as sometimes happens with other sort of commodities?
It can. The problem is I've actually seen a lot more people online in different places talking about we should have a strategic fertilizer reserve like we have with oil. And I love the thought process. I love where their head is at. The problem is when you look at oil, that can be stored for years, decades, I think it is, with no impact to its quality. The problem with these finished goods is it is hard to store. Anybody on the retail sector will tell you if it gets too humid, if this happens, there's a leak in the roof, there's any of these things that can happen, it can degrade the quality very, very quickly. And that assumes it was in solid quality to start with. So it is a much harder thing to do. And to sit there and say, oh, we should store this for several years in a row, I think we would see such a degradation in the quality of that product. I don't want to say it would be unusable. It'd be very difficult to use. So I just don't think you can store it. I would say, let's say a year or two, but that's about as much as you're going to get.
Could farmers switch to a different sort of fertilizer product since there are different options made in different places in the world, midstream, so to speak, if they had to?
If they've got the capability, let's focus on the three biggest nitrogens, for example. Anhydrous, it's a gas under pressure. So it comes out as a liquid, but it's essentially gas at on outside temperatures, if you will. It takes a very specific set of assets to store it and equipment to apply it. UAN is a liquid. Again, a different storage system, a different application system. Urea is a dry. It's easier to store. It's easier to spread out in the field. But you cannot, unless you've already got the equipment for two or three of these products, you can't just easily switch because you can't, you don't have the equipment on hand to put it into the ground where it needs to go. But for those that do have that capability, and there are some that are out there, I think you will see the switches. The problem is those arbitrage opportunities close up very, very quickly. Today, we are seeing a situation where urea is very high priced in relation to UAN, in relation to anhydrous. Anhydrous right now is the cheapest nitrogen source available to farmers. Well, if Mother Nature lets the farmer get out there, you're going to see farmers not turn the tractor off. It's 24/7 until every single pound is put in the soil. But the problem is, as that demand comes in a much bigger and bigger wave, that's going to support the price of anhydrous to start getting back in line with the next available. Let's just say it's UAN, and all of a sudden that demand starts going back to UAN, that starts to rise its price. So these arbitrage opportunities can open between the different styles of product, but ultimately a free market finds its balance.
All right, we are going to continue our conversation with Josh Linville, Vice President of Fertilizer for StoneX, a market analysis firm. After the break, we are talking about the U.S.'s ongoing war with Iran and how it's affecting farmers, particularly through fertilizer. 800-222-9455 if you want to join us. 800-222-9455. This is The 21st Show. It's The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about the U.S.'s ongoing war with Iran and how it's affecting farming and fertilizer in particular. Recent events have caused a chain reaction that's affecting multiple markets, including corn and soy among crops, fuel, natural gas, nitrogen, phosphate. We're talking about all this with Josh Linville, Vice President of Fertilizer for StoneX, a market analysis firm. So how do you best guess? I know, you know, it's hard to say what the future will hold, but how do we think crop yield could be affected by everything that's happening now?
In the U.S. North America space, I think our yields are going to be largely unaffected. I think the farmer finances are going to take a massive hit this year. I'm hoping there's a little bit of help because, again, this is the situation where the U.S. government caused a lot of this. So I'm hoping they step in to help bridge the gap of some of it with the farmer. But ultimately, I feel like we're going to have a strong chance of having normal supplies. We should be able to meet what we have because, again, a lot of our March imports are on the way. Our UAN and anhydrous demand, most of that is met by domestic production, either from the U.S. or from Canada. Phosphate demand is going to be down, but I also think the soil levels are high enough that they don't need to apply nearly as much as they would have in the past. So I'll just sit there and say, I think that we'll be okay. The problems where I start, where I believe we start to see is going to be more global in nature. It's going to be the nations whose demand periods are still coming up. And unfortunately, when you start to kind of go down that path and you start to say, well, who still needs to buy a lot and who may not be as financially strong as some of the markets that are here right here, you know, right today. Well, those nations, they focus on wheat production. You start looking like Eastern Europe, like Australia, they've got a lot of stuff they still need to buy. They're going to be the ones most at risk at this deal. So if anybody's going to start cutting, I think it's going to affect the wheat markets before it affects anything else. That's not to sit there and say, you know, corn and soybeans aren't going to have an impact. I do think that they will. I just don't think it will be as big as what we might see in the wheat markets, globally speaking.
Of course, fertilizer is only one of the many inputs that farmers have to deal with. What about oil prices? I mean, I think everybody understands that we're all paying more for gasoline. I'm sure that rolls downstream to farmers as well, yeah?
Yeah, of course. I'll tell you what, I bet you everybody cringes who goes to the pump today, and farmers are absolutely no different there. Diesel prices are sky high, just like everything else that's out there. And that's just another line item on the farmers' sheets that are continuing to dig in. I'd like to sit there and dig into their profits, but there's no profits. It creates a worse situation. It's just another barb in this whole story for the farm gate.
So, and I forgot to say this when we started again, if you want to join us today, 800-222-9455, that's 800-222-9455. So the U.S. is looking, I guess, to help alleviate the fertilizer crisis by considering buying from other places, Morocco, Venezuela. I mean, how would that factor into here? You know, would that help American farmers potentially?
It might, but it's unfortunately going to be a very small impact. We had recently heard they're going to allow Venezuelan products to come here. Well, the issue is that's urea. And last year, Venezuela, I think they only exported like 400,000 tons. So they used to be a much, much bigger manufacturer. I think they used to produce like 2.5 million tons per year. But that was prior to Hugo and Chavez. And so after decades of dictator rule and sanctions and things like that, you've got to believe that maintenance of these facilities has probably been somewhat poor, not for lack of trying, but just sometimes you can't get your hands on the people or the parts that you need to keep them rolling smoothly. So unfortunately, we think it's going to have a limited impact. Sure, opening up some of these trade routes that might have been cut off, like Moroccan phosphate, allowing those products to come here once again, it's going to help. But again, it doesn't solve the underlying problem. And that's where we currently believe the attention needs to be paid. This is a global supply and demand situation. There is not enough supply with all the things going on in the world to meet the demand. And that's why the price continues to go up. The market knows it can't fix supply short term, but it can fix demand by taking the price high enough that farmers say, no, thank you, I won't use it. I will switch to something that doesn't need as much or any of it.
All right, let's go to the phones now. 800-222-9455. We have Jacob calling from Whiteside County. Jacob, thanks for calling in.
Yeah, I guess I just wanted to make the comment that these fertilizers that we're talking about affect more than just the corn and soybeans that we might think about for Illinois, but it affects all agricultural products. I mean, Illinois is one of the biggest pumpkin growing states for like the Libby's pumpkin that you have at Thanksgiving, as well as wheat and rice, potatoes, crops like this. Even in our area up in Whiteside, we grow a fair amount of canned sweet corn and canning peas and green beans, and those all take these same fertilizers that we're talking about.
So it's a more widespread than just the sort of biggest commodity crops that people often think of. Absolutely. Jacob, is this something that you're seeing affect your farming operation at all? Yep, Jacob, I think.
Versus, but we do use, some of the mined potassium products and mined phosphate products. And yeah, those prices are increasing because of some of the things going on in the world these days.
Can I ask you overall, how's your outlook? I mean, we do hear a lot of farmers saying that, like, boy, the input costs are really, really, really creating problems for them.
Yeah, I mean, input costs have been continually going up over the last number of years with inflation. Because we're organic, a lot of our commodities are sold on a slightly different cycle. Our prices have actually been up the last, call it 9 months or so, compared to some of the commodity prices, just because of how they work in terms of imports and exports in the U.S. But as a whole, in terms of inputs, equipment parts are a lot more expensive. Fertilizers are more expensive. Labor is more expensive. Fuel. The cost to grow the things that we grow continues to go up for sure.
Jacob, thanks so much for calling in. I appreciate it.
The interesting thing, the only thing that isn't going up for the farmer is the price of that finished good, that crop, that grain.
Yeah, Josh, go ahead. Go off on that, because I've heard that, like you said, land costs have doubled. What is general, some other inputs up 40%. But really, if you look over the past 10 years, not much of a change in the prices that farmers are getting for their crops.
Yeah, and he makes a great point. This is a wide-ranging thing, right? We focus on the major crops out there, like the corn and the beans, just because it's usually the biggest driver of the fertilizer markets. But he's right. This absolutely hits every single thing. If it is a crop that is grown, it is being impacted at this point in one way or another. But yeah, when you start to look at the grain prices, and this is where it really hurts, we have seen higher fertilizer prices than where we are today. But it is extremely rare that we have seen the fertilizer prices where they are and the grain prices as low as they are. So unfortunately, we always look at farm marketing from a manufacturing standpoint. It simplifies things from my simpleton mind, but that way I'm only looking at it from an input-output side. And we always look at it and say, well, how many bushels of corn or wheat or beans or whatever it is does it take to pay for that 1 ton of urea, that 1 ton of phosphate, whatever it might be? And today, those numbers are insanely, incredibly high, and that just pinches that farmer that much more. They're paying so much more to grow the crop, and they are not being rewarded for it.
So for those of us who are not farmers, how does this roll downhill, so to speak, right? How should we look to see these potential cost increases affecting us?
Well, it turns into a situation that later on down the road, if we start to get to a point where we have another conversation, it's like, hey, we didn't get the fertilizer put on because it did not exist. It was not there. And it doesn't have to be just a U.S. thing. This can be a global thing. But if you start to find out that your yield number is going down, all of a sudden those grain prices do start to go up and the farmer will be rewarded, but that is eventually going to make its way to the grocery store. And I don't want to be sensational and say, oh, there's going to be food shortages and all this stuff. We are busy enough. We don't need to make sensational stories trying to get attention, but it is something we need to keep in the back of our mind. I mean, we're talking about losing so much fertilizer around the world that's normally there. In a worst case scenario, if this thing continues on and we can't get product through the Strait, it's going to be a part of the conversation at worst, or at best, it's going to be a higher price at the grocery store. At worst, we are talking about some tight food supplies out there.
And tighter in other countries, right, that are closer to these sources and maybe use more of the product that comes out of there?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing. That's where me being a kid of the 80s and, you know, the starving children, stuff like that, that's where that starts to come back in. And let's face it, countries like ours, yeah, are we hurting? Yes, but we don't know hurt compared to what some of these other countries, some of these other nations, what they feel. They aren't as strong financially. They don't have the capabilities to do what we do. Those are the people where you start seeing the kids on TV and they're asking for donations and help us feed these people. These are the types of stories that this is where we start having those kinds of stories again. And we're talking in a worst case scenario. Again, we're not trying to be sensational. We can try and get through this thing, come to a quick conclusion, but there is an end path that ends with that story.
We are the world. I remember it well. Josh Linville, Vice President of Fertilizer for Stone X. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Hey, thanks for having me, sir.